From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 27th day of April, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Ben Brown will be here from Missouri University Extension to discuss the export market, and we'll take up what's been happening on the ground in Kansas and with the ethanol industry with Dan O'Brien from Kansas State University Extension, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn gained 15 cents today, settled at $6.95 and a half, but it was the only thing that finished in the green on the screen. July corn was down 3. It settled at $6.54 and a half, and December at $5.62 and a quarter, with 6 lower in the corn. Soybeans, May contract down 19 and a quarter at $15.49 and three quarters. July 15, 19 and a half at 19 and three quarters lower, and November soybeans down 19 and a half cents at $13.42 and a half a bushel. Bean meal, $3.30 lower at $4.25.50. The bean oil, it actually did gain, up $1.24 at $66.45 for the May. July, however, down a penny at $60.88. July wheat, 6 and 3 quarters lower at $7.32 and 3 quarters. And the soft red, the hard red at $7.11 and a quarter, up 2 and a half cents. Live cattle futures were down 12 and a half for the day. The feeders were off $1.40 and the lean hogs were down 17 and a half cents. Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, joins us to talk us through a rock'em sock'em day, an overnight trade in Chicago. Tell me what happened.
Well, I think, you know, that overnight, basically, we had some people that probably either with option expiration or whatever, or just plain getting tired of being short some of these markets, and they got scared. And we run stuff up the limit overnight, and basically, it just really changed the chart patterns, everything like that. Had everybody really freaked out this morning on what was going on, and all of a sudden when that panic buying run out, why we traded down on the day and around that way. So, you know, we continue to look for clues of a market topping, but, one of the things to look for is unable to advance on bullish news. I don't know that we had any real bullish news today that way, but we did sell off at the end of the day. The basis levels, they've been staying strong. The board spreads, they're still, you know, hanging to the nearbys, up more, down less. But the rationing, I think, is starting to happen a little bit. And did we see fund liquidation today or not? I don't know. It's whether that was just people. First, I think they were getting out this morning of their short positions, and then later some of them that bought through the day or when it was up higher, I think it was a breakout, I think come back in and got out before the day was over. So a lot of people maybe on both sides of this market all in one day.
So there are a whole bunch of things that are happening or can happen. We'll hear about some of them, I suppose. We're still thinking a lot about export market, China in particular, the safrina crop in South America, what potential change, if any, in acreage might take place in the United States, and of course, dry conditions here. What are the most important items on your list? I know those things are all there. Do they come in some kind of order for you?
Well, I think, you know, one thing, we're watching the South American crop very closely. Michael Cordner trimmed the Brazil corn crop 3 million metric tons down to 100 million metric tons. And I think, you know, so that's, you know, 7 to 9 million metric tons more than what a lot of people are possibly thinking. The weather forecast, very, very, very important. Just trying to see, we're supposed to get some rain tomorrow and Thursday and maybe some next week. We see rain with the amount of planting that I think we're going to see come Monday, why that's going to be something that's going to be a little bit heavy on the markets, because we're really seeing a big early planting push. The one thing that I'm looking at very much so is how many acres are we going to get planted? I think with as dry as it is in a lot of these areas and with the insurance guarantees, why in the world would we not plant all the acres that are available to plant either corn or beans like the Dakotas and the places out west? Might not yield well, but I think they will get planted that way. So, we're seeing a lot of stuff. Once again, we saw beans that are probably coming into the East Coast from South America. So that's one thing that you know, not surprising, but we see that happen this time of year when it's hard to buy. Purdue generally does that. So, but we are overbought in this situation here right now, and a little bit of a setback or consolidation is called for technically.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Ben Brown of University of Missouri Extension now joins us. He's an agricultural economist there, part of FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, and has written an article for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can see that at Farm Doc Daily or just visit our website at willag.org. It'll be near the top of the page, discussing the current price hike in corn, particularly as it's related to the export market and demand from China. Can you tell me what you were hunting down?
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on, Todd. I really enjoy this. Yeah, so, you know, we've seen some rallies in corn prices. It seems like every day I turn the you know, the browser on and corn's up some. And anyways, you know, it's really been the combination of decreased supply here in the United States and tightening around the globe that has fed into an acceleration of corn export shipments. And that's something that, you know, at the beginning of the year, we all talked and we saw those early sales of the Chinese from the United States that were sparking all this conversation around, would China actually take it? Can they exceed their you know, their quota that they have in place and the higher tax burden that's placed on any bushels above that quota? There's lots of concern around this, but then we just kept growing export shipments. And currently USDA is projecting that the current marketing year for 2021 will set a record for corn exports from the United States at 2.675 billion bushels, which is up from the 2.4 and change from previous records. But, you know, when we look at the shipments, you know, it's really come here in the last couple of months. And certainly the United States focuses a lot of attention on shipping soybeans in the beginning part of the year when we're dominating the world market. And then there was, you know, lots of talk around, you know, we just didn't have the capacity to ship corn. Well, about March 1st, in my estimate, which is exactly the halfway point of the marketing year, is when corn shipments, actually inspected shipments, actually started to exceed the seasonal pace needed to hit USDA's target. And, you know, at least right now we sit, if we continued the pace that we do, at least by my estimation, we exceed USDA's mark by 62 million bushels. And so we've got 18 weeks in the marketing year left. And to ship everything that we need to hit USDA's target, we need to average just about 58.5 million bushels a week to reach that target. And for the last several weeks, we've been shipping 72 million bushels a week. And so, you know, that has certainly been impressive and something that has brought, I think, some optimism into the grain market and kind of fueled this rally higher that we're actually starting to see these shipments move forward. Now, if we look at total commitments that the U.S. has got on the books, so this is shipments and, committed sales or unshipped sales, you know, we said at 2.645 million bushels. So, you know, we're going to have a few more sales, which we normally do. We don't just stop sales in a normal year. We continue to make sales throughout the year for corn. And so, you know, we need a few more to get there, but we're above our pace, or at least the, you know, the needed pace to reach USDA's target, given that we will continue to make shipments. And that's well above where we're at. And at least by my calculations, you know, we're 485 million bushels above the pace needed to hit USDA's target. Now, the interesting thing is of everything that's not been shipped yet, about half of it, a little over half of it, of what we know, the sales that we know resides with the People's Republic of China. And certainly, you know, they have been buying grain, not only from the United States, but other parts of the world. USDA has continued to increase the amount of imports of corn by the Chinese. And currently we said at 24 million metric tons that they will import from the globe this year. And their attaché for the Foreign Ag Service recently came out and said that he expects, China to import 28 million metric tons for the year to continue to build stocks, to support the feed demand that they need, and then to help control domestic prices. And so certainly, that bodes well. But one of the things that, I've been watching is we need China's pace of increased shipments to continue to grow. They're currently not meeting the pace to even accept what they have on the books this year. And if we look at that, we need to average about 27 million bushels a week to reach these targets by the Chinese. And they've their biggest week came this last week, and it was only 25 million bushels. So they've been below and will continue to grow that. Their 4-week average for shipments is 17.5 million bushels. And certainly, it is possible, but we need them to pick up that pace to take all their shipments. Now, the other thing that's fueling corn export markets at the moment is our competition around the globe. Concern is starting to really grow in Brazil that the second crop, safrinha corn, is not going to have enough moisture to really mature and be, as fruitful as what many people had hoped. Now, we heard these same discussions by a lot of folks earlier in the year when we were concerned about their first crop, corn and soybeans, and that really just never materialized. In fact, their soybean crop continues to exceed expectations. But at least right now, given how late the corn crop down there was planted, somewhere roughly around a quarter to a third of their corn crop was planted outside the ideal window, and the annual dry season approaching, there is concern that Brazil is going to need corn. And their animal and livestock sector is certainly pushing the Brazilian government to make adjustments to allow for imports of grain outside the South American trading bloc. There's some hurdles in the way for the United States to just openly start exporting corn to Brazil, who, in most years is the second largest corn exporter to the world. A couple of those being, one, there's a lot of GMO varieties here in the United States that aren't approved in Brazil. Freight costs continue to remain elevated, and that's going to hamper our ability to enter that trading block. And then the last thing is Brazilian ports are really designed to be exporters, not major importers. And so there would be some significant cost and transition that have to be made there. And then lastly, their neighbor Argentina, who's been supplying Brazil with some grain, it's been rumored again that their government is looking at imposing an export tax on grain and other oilseed products to basically, retain some of that product domestically for their domestic needs, but then also to help raise revenue for the government. And so now, earlier in the year when they announced this and then they backed away from it, given producer blowback and export blowback, that point, it was really designed for revenue generation. This time, not only is it revenue generation, but they also potentially could be needing it domestically and putting some domestic export controls in place to hold that in place. So all said and done, there's lots of optimism, I think, in the corn export picture. It certainly has materialized rather rapidly here in the last few months. March is on, March is expected to be the largest export month of corn we've ever had, breaking the records set back in 2017 and 2018. And when we look at the picture moving forward, there's certainly things in the global market, whether that's lack of supply in Brazil and Argentina available to the world, and then also the Chinese that are rumored to be looking for more corn to meet their domestic needs as well. So I think a pretty optimistic and supportive picture of corn prices moving forward.
Hey, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
That's Ben Brown. He's with University of Missouri Extension and FAPRI, the Food Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Thanks to him. Dan O'Brien, he is here too. He's from Kansas State Extension and also an agricultural economist. Joins us once a month to talk about the agricultural energies. Today we'll take that up along with some more about the situation on the ground in Kansas. Let's start, Dan. And by the way, thank you for being with us today with agricultural energies. Ethanol, at this point, with prices of corn this high, does rationing need to begin?
Well, I think that that may come. We've seen within the last few weeks the price of ethanol move up to the place where we're at or above break even. That wasn't the case for, well, it hasn't been that way for months. But during the, well, for case in point, during the month of April, we started out, at least with the reports out of Iowa that I'm looking at, statewide reports, at about $1.83 per gallon for ethanol, moved to $1.88 the next week, $1.95 after that, closed the week of the 23rd at $2.15. You know, that's a fair run-up. Corn prices had been at $5.50 the start of April and moved up to $6.11. So, you know, before you start crunching any numbers, you're expecting the worst. but if you look at the month average, you know, average $1.95 per gallon for ethanol, $2.201 for DDGs per ton, $5.75 for the month, and for corn prices, and put all that together, so you've got a break even price of about, you know, for ethanol about $2.02 versus that $1.95 average price, and you're losing 7 cents a gallon. 7 cents is a lot less than we've been losing in recent months, though. But if you kind of focus on that last week, where we jumped above $2 sharply up to $2.15, basically a 20 cent gain in one week, and DDG prices $2.06, you know, a little bit of recovery there. So even with the $6.11 per bushel cost, you've got break even prices of $2.13, just below the $2.15. Price for ethanol, and you're actually making a couple cents. So, will we see rationing? Well, if the demand for ethanol doesn't drive prices to keep up with the increases with corn, well, then yeah, you know, the market would force via losses challenging situations upon different plants. Those especially those less efficient are finding themselves in their local logistical situation having a hard time getting any supplies. Well, yeah, then you've got plant closures or at least idling going on. But if the market price of ethanol keeps moving higher to match what's happens in corn, and the DDG market holds up, then, you know, you're breaking even. And frankly, what we see that week of the 23rd is as good as we've seen in terms of profitability performance for ethanol plants for a good long time. So maybe that's the story, Todd, in that in volatile markets, when you're operating on the margin like those plants are, yes, the input costs go up, but if the outputs hold steady in proportion to what's happening on the input side, then you keep going. I would say that the advantage of the ethanol industry is the renewable fuel standard. You know, the requirement that we blend certain percentages of fuel with ethanol in most almost all the country. So, given that, you know, that mandate, the RFS, renewable fuel standard, will drive to some degree what happens in the ethanol prices. And that ultimately will probably, during this volatile time in the corn market, be the thing that really, really helps the ethanol industry a bunch.
Between the two things that we've talked about here on this program, exports with Ben Brown and ethanol with you, demand continues to be really good. That leaves the livestock sector, which, of course, Kansas is heavily involved in with the cattle, beef cattle production side. And I'm wondering what grain and oilseed farmers are thinking at this point, because on the ground they have to have a really interesting situation with the soy corn ratio changing and wheat in dry conditions.
Yes, uncertainty about wheat. We've had some cold temperatures of late for about the second or third shot. We keep trying to kill off the winter wheat crop, and it's pretty stubborn and dogged. It doesn't want to go easily, but that's the story on that crop. But all that said, we're seeing price ratios between corn and wheat out here in the Western Corn Belt, particularly around the Garden City region and in parts of the country where we have a lot of livestock feeding that occurs. We're seeing the price of wheat below the price of corn on a per bushel basis, and when you take it down to a per pound basis, which is, you know, what a livestock feeder would what they'd be looking at more so. You've got a situation where the price of wheat on a per pound basis in Western Kansas is about 90% of the price of corn. So I know that that last quarterly stocks report did not say that there was much happening in the way of wheat feeding, but I'm really, I think the best thing for me to say is I'm really looking forward to the end of June stocks report, because that along with the reports we're hearing from Asia that the feeders over there are switching to wheat feeding just out of necessity. Well, you know, that's sort of where we're at here too. And I think the crystal ball to have on these things is that we wish we had was to see what happens when we do get whatever we get for wheat out here in the Western Plains. And that crop comes in, you know, late June, early July. If we're scrambling for corn, grain sorghum supplies to fill either export needs or ethanol needs, then your livestock feeding jumps right into that scrum and probably will bid for whatever fungible organic feed stuff it can get, and that the first one up is going to be wheat, basically.
Wow, that makes the June 30, as you mentioned, grain stocks report really important and interesting to look forward to, because it could show less corn bushels actually used in the livestock sector, potentially less exports if there is the change to more wheat feeding around the rest of the world, which happens on a fairly regular basis, and more acres of corn all at the same time. So what a fun ride it might be between now and then, I would think.
Well, and I think the those rations are typically built on feed grains, you know, corn, grain sorghum, it's available, et cetera, you know, that we'd use. So they don't make that switch unless they just don't have a choice. And so that'll be the issue. You have very inelastic demand. You've got livestock on feed in these places. You've got to finish them out. And if the cost or the availability of corn isn't as great, then you've got an issue there. I even think out in these Western areas that with the continued strength in corn and some of the, I would call it softening. I'd say moderating in export demand for grain sorghum. I wonder when we'll start to be pulling sorghum into rations. Not because we have to fill that gap that corn's being pulled out of because of exports. It's not that we don't have a tremendous price for grain sorghum, but we have such a price for corn that on a least cost ration basis, if you can get sorghum for 50 cents under 50 cents less than corn, even though it's 5.50 or six, still that'll come in too. And as your good colleagues there that in the Illinois Ag Economics will tell you, and they're some of the best. You know, people are operating on the margin. The profit maximizers will gain title to whatever resources they need to survive and keep going. And in this case, when corn's jumping up so much, where do we go? Well, it's either going to be wheat or possibly even grain sorghum as we go forward.
Hey, thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State Extension. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.